Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. It's another summer afternoon. It is what it is. I mean, there's no reason to spend a whole lot of time talking about it. We may get some rain because it gets so hot the clouds can't stand it anymore. But, yeah, welcome in. Bill, Dan, got Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover 24/7 Sports here in the studio. Is that probably the best way to do it now?
That's it, Auburn Undercover and 24/7 Sports. That's
yeah.
It.
Mm-hmm. Man, how you doing?
I'm good. You're right. It's warm, but it's kind of summertime.
Yeah,
it really
it is.
And it's honestly felt hotter because we had such a cool spring.
We did. Yep.
And we've actually had
a little more rain than we usually have by this time.
We're thinking about that, you know, like SEC tournament, those last few baseball series, it was in the 70s in time.
Yeah.
You're like, you know, normally that's in 95 degree weather. So it's been great. Looking forward to it. I mean, we're on the cusp of SEC Media Days.
Less than a week before Auburn's appearance.
Yes, and so looking forward to just kind of getting some actual football talk. I don't know that there'll be a whole lot of groundbreaking news. We'll see if we find out anything on the player front for Auburn, but just looking forward to getting up there. And really interested. I'm really interested in Monday in hearing Greg Sankey. I never really care a whole lot about what he has to say. This one is kind of is interesting to me to see how
is he going to set the stage for not just this year but the future of
correct,
the SEC.
Correct.
And there are pressing NIL questions, I think, for the commissioner of the league too, as far as what he wants and where he wants enforcement to come from. You know, I think that's always going to be something pretty much every year until the issue goes away as far as regulation of NIL.
Did you see the eight schools today that announced a collective?
No, I did not. When did this happen? The last couple hours?
A collective group. It happened this morning. Florida State was one of them.
Yeah, I missed it.
They announced a group of to figure out how to do that very thing. How are we going to move together as a group to figure out how to make students employed?
Are they all like ACC schools?
No, Michigan was one.
Okay, that's interesting.
Florida State was one.
You said Florida State, that's why I asked.
USC was one. Let me see if I can find it. I can find it real quick. But no, it was trying to go, hey, how do you figure out how to make this thing a?
This is the collective.
There need to be. I mean,
collective
it's
association.
There's no question. I mean, from the outset, I mean, since this started, everyone has said, hey, there need to be some parameters. There need to be some type of guidelines.
Yeah, let's see.
Ole Miss, Georgia, and Tennessee are also part of these collectives. These are collectives. A joint announcement, I'm going to use, this is Brendan Sinone from Florida State.
That's it.
Knowles 247.
Yep.
A joint announcement between the Battle's End and collectives representing Georgia, Tennessee, Ole Miss, USC, Michigan, and Penn State was released on Wednesday. The seven collectives create the Collective Association, self-described as a trade association. The intent of TCA is, quote, to advocate for student athletes, share best practices, and act as a unified voice to shape the development of the NIL market and beyond.
You know, it's great. This is like, okay, so if the NCAA can't do anything, we'll form our own group.
There is no mention of the NCAA their entire release.
I don't see any reason why there should
no,
be.
No, and, you know, it says, now there, I take that back. In part of it, it says that they must adhere to NCAA legislation or policy when it conflicts with permissive state laws.
Okay.
But that's pretty wide open. And so, really interesting to see what happens with things like this moving forward, because they have the NCAA, by doing what they've done and by dragging their feet, have opened the door for states and for schools and for leagues and for everybody to go, okay, well, we'll just handle it the way we want to.
When the NCAA in this era, now, if and when to me the NCAA decides, like, okay, we're gonna take down a school because of their relationship with a collective or because of what we perceive as NIL violations, when a major you know, when one of the big fish in the world of college athletics, you know, is threatened as either a program or as an athletic department, I think that's when we're going to see how serious they are about enforcing the rules as written. That memo that came out recently, right, that suggested, you know, talking about how even if something is allowed under state law, if it's not allowed under NCAA rules, you know, you're not expected to do it, and you know those sorts of things. Like, you know, I feel like the other shoe could drop, and there could be a school that finds itself having to defend the actions of its collective or something similar. But until then, yeah, it feels like it's the Wild West, and you don't know where that law enforcement's going to come from.
Now, there was not any school from one of the states that has those laws yet, was there? Of the eight, I don't think there's. There's not nobody from Texas or Arkansas or what was the other state? Maybe Missouri.
Yeah.
But yeah, that it's going to be interesting to see if other schools join that association.
Correct. If it becomes. And that's what it feels like. It feels like it's the first foray into, hey, let's bring everybody together and we're going to do our own thing.
So I want to talk to Jason about, you know, what he's looking forward to at Media Days with the – first of all, you were absolutely right about Luke Deal. I think we talked about it on last week's show. I don't know if that prompted a piece of writing about, you know, Luke Deal being a pretty solid choice, but I think you were right on. You convinced me last week during the show that this is a guy – who is respected enough, and it, as was pointed out to me, he's not just respected by guys on offense that work alongside him. Because of his prowess as a blocker, I think there's plenty of defensive players.
Yeah, and just the way he carries himself.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. A married fella, you know, which you know, you don't want to put too much stock into, but it's not nothing that he's these guys been married for I think over a year now.
Yep.
Since the Deal nuptials. But between Luke Deal, Cam Stutz, and Elijah McAllister, three seniors picked earlier this week by Hugh Freeze to go to Media Days and represent Auburn. What do you think of the selections?
Really, really interesting group, in my opinion. It shows me that leadership, experience, all those things that you think about in terms of guys that, hey, this is who we want to represent our program. That's what this was about. You think about guys like that and newcomer. And I wrote about it Monday. Like, I wouldn't be surprised to see a transfer newcomer. Wasn't really sure which one it would be. And then it wound up being, you know, McAllister. And so I don't think it's a group that's going to merit a bunch of all. Normally you think about guys, you know, oh, this guy's going to be picked at all SEC teams. I don't think this is going to be that group. But I think it's a group that when they get up there and talk about things, they've got experience with multiple staffs. I mean, you got two guys in this group. This will be their third staff at Auburn. When you think about Luke Deal and Cam Stutz and how they were recruited, who they played for, now they're here. And then you have Elijah McAllister that's coming in as a transfer. Those guys can speak to the difference in culture, the difference in everything involved. And I think that's an important part of talking about Auburn right now, so I thought they were a pretty good choice.
Yeah, and then the other thing I told somebody when I was asked about, well, why do you take somebody who's only been here since January? And I said, well, because the staff has basically only been here a couple of weeks more than that. So, I mean, he can definitely talk as well as the players who've been here about the current staff and how things have gone and the expectations for the fall.
Yeah, no, I think that's it. I think he's also a guy that can say, look, here's what I've seen since I've been here.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I see from here. He's also been at another SEC school, and he can talk about, hey, where is it in comparison to what you were, all those things. So, yeah, it won't be a group that garners a ton of attention, but it's going to be a group, I think, that –
I think they're going to represent themselves
and that's
very
it.
Well.
What they're trying, and what they're trying to do, which is, hey, this is about Auburn. It's not about a person, and that's kind of what they're building. That's what they're trying to talk about in general.
What you mentioned earlier in the segment that Hugh Freeze could be asked, among the things that Hugh Freeze could be asked about, is the status of certain players. How has, if at all, has your outlet covered the situation that seemed to involve Jarquez Hunter that other outlets, you know, I know other places reported on it, and it felt like we didn't have nearly as many details
no.
to sort of talk about it. Yeah, to talk about it in any in any detail. But I imagine Hugh Freeze could be asked about something pertaining to that.
Yeah,
next week.
I think you have to find out what his status is. It may still be a question mark at that time, but you have to go, hey, what's his status and how those things go. So there'll be some of those questions. There'll be questions about a couple of guys that aren't here. Quintrell, Jameson, Travis, defensive lineman. Will he get here in time? Do you know that, you know, wide receiver, he's not going to make it. He's going to head to junior college. Jaquavius Sorry. So no kind of those things. That's it. That's the roster in itself. And so,
what are the rules now? Does he have to spend 2 years in junior college because he was?
If you're not a qualifier,
you have to graduate junior college.
If you can graduate quicker than that, you can.
So if you could start this summer, you might be able to graduate by next summer.
Yeah, or you could get to January of your second year, something like that. But he could
spend a couple years in junior college.
Yeah, I think yes. So. But yeah, no, those are things that you think about Hugh Freeze, you think about that, you think about quarterbacks, you think about all the questions that you get, roster rebuild, transfer portal, NIL. I mean, it's going to be it's going to be almost the same question for a lot of the head coaches.
You know that everywhere he goes, there are going to be questions asked of him about why do you think you deserve to be here?
Yeah. I mean, Jason, which we don't have to heard, do that again. Yeah.
Jason cut right through it and went to the football stuff, and it does feel like that's. I mean, I love that, but
we'd love to do.
Well,
that's
what I'm interested in.
That's
too.
That's what we will do.
Right.
The folks who have covered him since then, for the national people and the people around the league, they're going to go back to the story from December that everybody we have already written about. That becomes another story for another day on Tuesday.
Yeah, and I think there are sort of tabloidy ways to approach the Hugh Freeze situation. At the same time, I don't think it's unreasonable for someone to ask, as we were saying earlier this week, I don't think it's unreasonable for someone to say, like, what do you say to people who think you shouldn't have this job, or what is your response, or what has been – how have you responded, to any sort of – because it's – and it gives him
a chance. But if he's being asked that by Auburn people, it seems pretty redundant.
No, I agree, because he told the story when he was introduced at Auburn. Right. But I also don't think he's someone who shies away from telling his story and what he's learned from – even if they were – it was somewhat self-inflicted adversity. It's adversity that he is trying to bounce back from. So, yeah, I'm curious to see Jason, how much of Hugh Freeze's time, especially in the big room and the small room, is devoted to actual football questions? Because we've seen in the past how all it takes is a couple of people looking to go viral.
It's not going to be much. Mm-hmm. Be my guess. My guess is it is going to be 70% other than football. There'll be a few quarterback questions maybe, and how you see that. I would guess it's going to be 70% outside of this football roster, be my guess. That's the world you live in SEC Media Days, and it's why so many of us don't really enjoy it. And it's why here's the thing. Honestly, it's why 90% of the things I get will not be in that room. 90% of the things that I write on those days when I'm there will be me talking to someone else away from that room. That's the way it goes.
Yep. 334-321-1390. That is the Kia of Auburn hotline. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one, and they're also the sponsor of our number one of the drive.
That's right. You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, which is available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. Rate, review, subscribe if you get the podcast that way. Or go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center. You can also listen live to the show with the Listen Live link at the top of the page at ESPNAU.com. And you're going to want to listen live next week as we are going to go wall-to-wall, 7 straight hours of coverage right here on ESPN 106.7, all 4 days of Media Days. The Max Roundtable is going to be up there on the line. Jacob's going to be up there, and I'm going to be up there beaming in to the show while Bill's here in the studio. So it should be a good time in Nashville next week, and you're not going to want to miss the coverage right here on ESPN 106.7.
We'll get to our first break here on this Wednesday edition of The Drive. Jason with us for a couple of more segments. Love for you to join in. Come on in.
Hi, this is Michael from University 8.
ESPN 1067 online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. 20 minutes after 4 o'clock here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell, and Drew at the controls. And we'd love for you to join in. You heard the number there, 334-321-1390. Jason, it's the Major League All-Star break. Last night, the National League snapping a 9-year losing streak against the American League. Of course, what else has been going on over the All-Star break has been the Major League Draft. And quite a bit of news about Auburn here in the Major League Draft. A couple of signees going before the second round got underway. And then probably a couple of other signees that won't be headed to Auburn. And then Auburn with, what, 4 players drafted and 1 signing free as a free agent?
Yeah, so you look and see if we can do it off the top of my head. Obviously, the first 2 guys were guys they're hoping to hold on to either one of Colt Emerson or Kevin McGonigal. That's not going to be the case. Those guys.
No, those guys are going to take home about a total of $6 million between them.
Yeah, in a pretty good spot there. And so that's a couple of the signees. Bjorn Johnson was drafted in the 12th round, pitcher from Washington. More than likely he'll sign to that early. Dylan Watts was a late junior college signing addition for Auburn. Was an 18th rounder by the Brewers as well, the same team that drafted Bjorn Johnson. Dylan Watts is a junior college player, but only had 1 year, a freshman at Tacoma, Washington Community College. Mid-90s fastball, 3-0, 6 saves in 14 appearances. Gave up one earned run.
The ERA is what's
one earned
ridiculous.
Run in 38 innings, which is 0.23. 42 walks, 42 strikeouts, 7 walks. And so that's a guy that you get on campus, feels like a guy that's going to help you some there.
Mm-hmm.
So you think about that. And so that's your signees.
Sam
Mongelli was a transfer commitment
from Sacred Heart.
Sacred Heart was a Northeast Conference Player of the Year, was a second team All American. Auburn was hoping to hold on to him. He got drafted in the 10th round by the Dodgers. He told me he plans to sign, which is not a surprise. And so they were hoping that Mike could slide on him and get him in. So that probably would
it leaves you a little short, you would think, in the middle infield.
Yeah. And so you have Cooper Weiss coming in from Miami of Ohio, a guy that hit 12 or 13 home runs this year, batted over 300.
Caden Green coming back.
My guess, and then you also have Eric Guevara, who's a talented shortstop from the state of Georgia, high school signee. So they signed a few of those guys in high school. And my guess is that they'll add at least one more transfer now, maybe a second transfer infielder to this group, because you now got a little bit to work with, because from a scholarship standpoint, you're talking about some fairly big.
Oh
bigger,
yeah, you would have had to have given a good amount to Emerson and McGonigal.
Yes, and so from a scholarship / NIL standpoint, you got a little bit to play with, and so those are the two positions I think you look at how you figure there, and can you find another starting pitcher? I think that's the thing you're looking for. The good news is, right now, it looks like Joseph Gonzalez is going to be back.
Yeah, talking about finding a starting pitcher.
What could change?
Yeah, just if somebody were to say, hey, we're going to give you $250,000 because we didn't sign one of our guys, that's how it could change. I don't foresee that happening, because most of the time now, the draft's so different than it was. You think about like
you don't draft a whole lot of guys that you don't feel pretty good
about. Well, because there's only 20 rounds, right. And there's still a lot of teams that be done. You think about all the guys over the years that were drafted in 50s and 60 rounds that end up making it. Now pretty much everybody you draft now, you've already talked to, and they said, yeah, I'm going to sign. So that's how you draft them. So you look at Joseph Gonzalez. Bobby Pierce is the interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby Pierce is a guy that – right now, I think I would lean towards him coming back to Auburn right now and being kind of that Cason Howell, fifth-year leader guy that kind of is the guy that kind of takes control of the locker room. I think he could be that guy. Christian Herberholtz had a chance to get drafted coming back, and so he'll be back as well. So you think about all of a sudden from a pitching standpoint, Zach Crotchfield, Drew Nelson, Hayden Murphy, Will Cannon on the back end, Tanner Bauman. All of a sudden you look at some of those pieces that you put together this year, and add, get a Joseph Gonzalez back and maybe add a another maybe potential starting arm on that side, all of a sudden you start to look pretty good on the mound. And so that's kind of that. But, you know, you also get in a couple of guys that had a chance to get drafted that turned out some money. Cam Tilley is a guy that was a Team USA teammate of McGonagall and Colt Emerson last summer. Probably could have been a first two or three round selection and said, hey, once you got past my number, that's it. I'm going to school. So he is already here, already gone through Camp War Eagle. And so, Kay Ballou from Auburn High School was a guy that had a chance to get drafted too. Big, powerful outfielder guy that's going to have some of that power potential. But he's a guy that had a chance to get drafted as well and said, no, I'm going to school. So, interesting roster, but much like football, going to need a program for the first few weeks.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's just the way it is. That's just kind of the way the territory nowadays in college sports.
You know, we were talking about this the other day. What do you think about I like the draft being where it is now as opposed to when it was during the College World Series.
Yeah, it's good from a fan perspective. It's terrible for a college baseball coach perspective, though.
Well, when is a good time that you could have it, though?
Yeah, but this is not it because, I mean, a lot of these guys will be starting school here in a couple of weeks.
Sure.
And you've got to figure out what your roster is going to look like.
You got a month, basically.
Correct.
You know.
And while they're negotiating deals, the transfer portal closes tomorrow or
now,
today.
See, that's the problem. The problem is the portal should stay open to at least allow that. There should be something in there like that.
But then there you go. Then you're pushing it even for. Then you go, okay, I was counting on this guy. He left. Now I got to find a guy in 2 weeks to get my roster before school starts. I mean, it kind of feels like December if December was in August in football.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is basically what you're doing. No, it's right. No, it's right because it's not the actual season, but it's the same thing where coach going, you know, I've got to recruit. I've got a signing class to try to get in. In baseball, you think about it going, okay, trying to hold on to my guys to keep from transferring.
Getting in the transfer portal.
Got to go look for transfers out of the portal. We got to worry about the draft. But the difference is in the draft is that it's not like a football draft where those guys enter
they're
the
not
draft
gone.
And they're done.
Yeah.
That's it. This is, well, he could get drafted. Maybe he doesn't. Well, I'll get drafted, but only if they give me $2 million. Well, maybe I'll change my mind and sign for $750. And like, there's so much unknown that it's just been. My guess is that Butch Thompson and Carl Nonnemaker, Gabe Gross, those guys, they've probably spent, you know, 10, 12 hours on the phone each day the last 3 or 4 days and trying to figure out what's happening.
And, yeah. And who they're going to have and who they can add and how much they have to add.
Correct. That's all those things. And
that's the other thing, like you were talking about. I mean,
it's percentages of scholarships.
Yes. It's not like in the other sports, at least in football and basketball, okay, you know you've got this many spots. Well, in baseball, you may need 3 or 4 players, but you may only have 2 scholarships and one and a third, and you still
only have that many spots.
Right.
So it's still
a 35-man roster.
Roster number, 11.7 scholarships. We go, okay, how much potentially can a guy help himself with NIL money down the road to offset some of that cost and all those things? It's just – it's crazy.
What are the biggest like decisions you're waiting on within the baseball? I mean, are there like you mentioned Bobby Pierce? You know what he decides to do is that maybe?
Yeah, I think that and seeing potentially what the transfer market could look like in the next couple of weeks before school starts. That there's still some bigger names out there that are looking and that's it. Can you get a big fish to add to the group before this thing's over with? I mean, I think they feel pretty good about where they are, but if you could add, you know, we're talking about it like in football, but it's, you know, I've said it before and I'll say it again, it kind of feels like the back end of an NFL draft to me where you're going, even if you don't need this guy, if you get a guy that's better than the guy you got, you better go after him. That's it. Mm-hmm. And that's what LSU just did, and they won a national championship. They had some pieces already in place, but they said, well, we're going to go shoot for the moon and try to get a guy that's better than the guy we got. And they did that in some spots, and it paid off for him.
Jason Caldwell with us for another segment. Your chance to talk with him if you've got any questions for Jason.
334-321-1390. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Stick with us here on the Wednesday Drive.
Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 27 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Wednesday. Bill and Dan joined by Jason Caldwell and Drew at the controls. And let's get to the Kia of Auburn hotline. And Bill gets us started. Hey, Bill.
Hey, guys. I wanted to direct this question toward Jason real quick, because you talk to a lot of these recruits. You're closer than most, I guess you would say. Jason, is the day of a young coach or a new staff coming in trying to build a program, offering having playing time or certainly opportunities for playing time in the very near future, is that over with now, or does everybody just want to go to Georgia, Alabama, and get in line to hope they play someday? And then, that's kind of my question.
Yeah, I think there's a fine line and a way to build it. Now, I think you look in Auburn, they've had success already, and they're in with a couple guys that. Joseph Phillips was going to Georgia, and Auburn got him. Mm-hmm. You look at, linebacker from Chilton County, DeMarcus Riddick, is committed to Georgia. Alabama's in. Auburn's got a good shot at him. And there's some guy.
Riddick's the one making an announcement a couple of days before Big Cat.
Yes, yeah, plans, end of this month.
Plans on going.
Right
plans
now, yes. Plans
on Big Cat.
Yes.
See what happens there.
So I think if you're a school like Auburn, you go, hey, can you get a couple this year? Can you add to it and get a couple more next year? What you have to be mindful of is in this day and age of development, you got to develop guys, be very cognizant of what you're doing. And that's why I think system is so important nowadays. When you think about how you're doing things offensively and defensively, because when you go from tempo spread to under center doing those things, then it's not a rebuild, but it makes it really difficult. If you're recruiting to this and you know what you're looking for, you can find some guys, I think, to help you bridge the gap a little bit. You got the transfer portal. In the end, it is tough. It's probably as difficult, and we've been saying it for years. I said, look, there's no Auburn coach that had it harder than Gus Malzahn. It ain't getting any easier with Texas and Oklahoma coming in this league. But I do think that if you do the right things, this is a place you can recruit at and win some of those battles, and they're doing some of that stuff now.
But I think across college football, Bill, it's harder than ever before to try to build with, okay, well, it's going to take either
all.
Yeah.
There's no all anymore.
There's going to be a youth movement, and maybe they're going to take their lumps the first year, but they'll build to something as sophomores or as juniors or even, I was thinking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, you'd better show – chart, yeah, you know,
the other
marked improvement quick.
The Harsin plan previously to coming to Auburn, which was you bring guys in and often they'll sit the bench for a couple of years and learn the way you want it, and they won't get on the field until their fourth year or their fifth year as college football players. And I think especially now with
they better love and have always wanted to be at that school.
With the free movement you have for players now and their ability to leave without losing a year of eligibility, being able to play immediately if they leave, I just think it's harder than ever to try to build a team that way, because the really special players in year one might want to go play for a team that has a better chance of winning a championship or more of an NFL pedigree or just more talent around them, and you might be perennially restarting that rebuild.
Yeah, and there's – yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and you're right, Dan. That's, I'm probably stuck in the past a little bit, and that's what I'm thinking. You can't really build it like they did years ago, and that's all changed now. But
I think you could have players on the team that you're developing.
Craig,
that
it's
way.
just not the program. Individually, you can do it. It kind of reminds me. I'm thinking about. We talked about this before. It's the same thing in basketball. The days of a Bryce Brown are probably gone. the days of a guy like that.
Yeah,
that
Jared Harper's in the mid-major leagues.
Well, Jared Harper played.
Jared played as a freshman. Played a lot as a freshman.
You know, Bryce Brown comes in. He doesn't play his first year.
No, those guys want to play. They'll be somewhere playing.
Correct. And you say, look, hey, we're going to wait and see how he turns out, and we'll get him when he goes in the portal. So,
and I know George has a lot of recruiting money. $2 million, I think I read, where they they can throw a lot of money around, and not all of it is money, but for certain players, I'm sure it is. So, it's like the quarterback situation, which neither here nor there to me. But they've got like four star quarterbacks, and they just signed this kid from California. They're moving into Buford. At some point, you got to wonder: the kids want to play more. It's really, to their credit, they can pull it off. But.
Well, I don't think it's going to last.
No.
I mean, that's why Kirby's not taking a quarterback. He's not taking Carson back to Nashville. I mean, you don't want to let on. You want to keep it a competition as long as you can. But once the competition is decided and someone's the starting quarterback, there's going to be some more movement. I mean, they may not be able to jump into the portal then, but they'll be making plans.
Well, I hope we can. Yeah, it's kind of distressing a little bit when you just see we're not really. But like Jason said, little by little, I guess we'll get back in it. But I'd just like to see. It's like the Gus days. I mean, he recruited Freddie well, but he couldn't get any offensive linemen. We seem to be recruiting Freddie better, but there's still not there. Like you'd like to see somebody on the offensive line. Defensively, we seem to be picking up some pretty good players.
Well, here's the thing I look at from an offensive line standpoint. There's one 5-star offensive lineman in this country right now. One. There's one. There's one guy in the top 32. Now, it may have changed. They updated it. So that's the most difficult spot to go get a 4- and 5-star guy. There's fewer of them, and people sign more of those guys than do any other position in the country.
We should probably specify tackle, too, because I think even Gus Malzahn was signing high-level.
Well, no, they didn't. They didn't sign anybody.
Numbers-wise, they didn't. They had like 2 years when they signed a few guys.
And Hugh Freeze signed Connor Lou, who was one of the high-level.
Well, they brought in, between transfer and high school, they brought in more players than Auburn signed the last 5 years on the offensive line.
Yep.
Yes, but, that's the – offensive line kind of gets the talk. And they're trying to reverse that trend. But part of that trend is when you haven't signed guys that have been very good and you don't get guys to the NFL, then guys want to go, this group has gotten guys to the NFL. They haven't done it at Auburn yet. And so if you do that and all of a sudden a Dylan Wade makes it to the NFL and a couple of guys from this year's team, and then guys go, oh, man, that system and those guys can get me there, that's what people are looking for. And so – that's why Georgia and Alabama, especially, and Ohio State, you recruit at a high level, and then guys turn around and make it to the NFL, and you get the next guys too. And so when you recruit those types of players to that point too, you recruit those guys, they always think they're going to go win the job.
Right.
Well, I'm going to win it this year. I mean, Brock Vandegrift there from
– Georgia's loading up on offensive linemen again, and there's a reason for that.
And they got 40 of them, and they're still getting more of those guys because they go, well, no – I'm going to be the one that makes it this time.
Back to the Kia of Auburn hotline. Appreciate the call, Bill. Tommy is up next. Hey, Tommy.
Hey, guys. This is Tommy from Trustful, Alabama, first-time caller.
Good hearing
from you. Yes, sir. Appreciate you taking my call. I've got just a quick question for Jason, and I'll hang up and listen after I ask it. Jason, can Auburn baseball ever get to the point of not only getting to Omaha, but actually – winning a College World Series, or are the limitations that they've always been up against, like scholarship limitations, no lottery, to keep them from getting the best players? I just want to get your take. Can Auburn baseball ever win a College World Series? And I'll hang up and listen.
I think Auburn baseball right now is as close as any team on this campus, in my opinion, because you look and you think about they've been, a couple times they lost.
Yeah, been
to Florida.
Two of the last four, right?
That's it. You get there and you
got a chance.
Yeah, well, I mean, just look this year. They beat LSU 2 out of 3, and it was in Auburn. One of those was by a run rule. It's about playing your best baseball at the best time, which is what LSU did down the stretch. And they were really talented. It was a really talented team. Playing your best baseball at the best time, getting a few breaks along the way. And because you start thinking about it going, okay, getting to the College World Series, you get to the College World Series and you've only had to beat four teams. That's what Butch Johnson always says. Look, you don't have to beat a bunch. You don't have to beat 63 teams. You just have to beat six or seven teams. That's it. And so you think about how close they've been. You win the first game, and that's the thing.
That is critical.
That's it.
And losing that first game, and you're in a big hole.
And you know, they were able to win game two out there. But it's about winning the first game and having a few things go your way to do that. You'd have done that in 2019. Then you'd have put yourself in a really good position moving forward. And so, it's a little more difficult. But as you continue to build the program, you're building pitching depth. You're building more of those guys, more pieces together. And when you continue to get guys to Major League Baseball, your recruiting continues to get better. And the NIL side of things can be really beneficial to Auburn baseball, more so than it is a lot of other sports because of the limitations.
Nice to have the facilities being improved as
well. Correct. That's a big deal, too.
I know you got to run soon. What can you tell us about Malik Blockton?
Yeah, I think a guy that is a cornerstone piece for a defense moving forward. I mean, obviously it's Marcus Harris's brother. Reminds me a little bit more from a playing style of Colby Wooden, where I think he's a guy that maybe right away isn't as good as maybe some of the other highly ranked players, but I think he's a guy that has so much upside because he's had to work his craft, because he was a guy that, unlike some other guys that maybe, hey, they're dominating smaller divisions or doing those things, he's played up and played as a ninth grader with teams that were challenging for state championships. So he has continuously gotten better and better. Hard worker, great kid. I think a guy that you think about in a few years as one of those guys that's a team captain that goes to an SEC media days. I think he's one of those guys.
Any other possibilities or likely or guys to keep an eye on here over the next few weeks before we head to Big Cat?
Yeah, Jalen Crawford, 4-star DB, will announce on Saturday, and that's probably the next likely guy. Auburn, Florida, LSU, Auburn's right there. I like Auburn's chances. We'll see. They're able to finish it off, but that'd be a big one. Parkview High School there in Lilburn, Georgia. This guy that's visited a bunch. Auburn's been right there for quite a while, so that's the next guy there. We've seen a few kind of hint at maybe doing something. Nothing concrete until we get to the end of the month, and I think there's going to be some guys that make a final decision, whether it's DeMarcus Riddick. We'll see if a guy like Perry Thompson, the 5-star Alabama commitment from Foley. If he says, have final decision here, Auburn's in the mix there too. So there'll be some of those things later in the month as well.
Man, looking forward to it. It's about to really get going again. I mean, not that it's been that quiet. There's been plenty going on, but it's about to get cranked back up with media days next week. And you're going to be heading up to Nashville too, right?
Yep, be heading up on Sunday night. I get there and then have thoughts Monday, Monday, Tuesday. Probably part of the day for me, Wednesday, head back Wednesday, but Nathan and Christian will be there from Monday to Thursday, so they'll have kind of the full coverage, and we'll have thoughts from every coach, every player, hopefully some of our own interviews there at our YouTube page at Auburn Undercover that people can check out as well.
I'll be there all 4 days as well, so I'll hang out with Nathan.
Yep, sounds good.
While we're up there. What's this bill about the regional food that you were mentioning?
Oh, I heard Doug talking about one of the things the SEC was announcing, that SEC cities are sending some special snacks and treats and things up there for the media as well. So there'll be some specialties of each SEC city. So that's something you guys can enjoy.
Yeah, I wonder what that is.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what every school sends.
Yeah.
Think about what Auburn's like delicacies are,
I'm guessing it's going to be a jug of lemonade, be my guess.
Yeah, chicken fingers.
Probably.
Yeah. No. Well, I mean, Guthrie's is now the chicken finger of Alabama football, so that's kind of different. So.
Yeah. Well, you guys have fun. I'll be anchoring stuff here. Jason, let everybody know how they can keep up with everything there at 24/7.
Yep. AuburnUndercover.com. You can check us out there. I think today may be the last day of the 15-year anniversary special. 70% off. You're not going to beat that deal.
So, no kidding.
Check it out. It's like $26 a year. So you can find that there on the front page, and also follow me on Twitter at ITATJason.
All right, Jason, thanks a lot.
Thanks,
man.
Guys.
We'll get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us as we continue here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive. Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back in to The Drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. Let's get right back to the Kia of Auburn hotline, and Yellowhammer is up next. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, afternoon. So anyway, I've always been of the opinion that if you don't have a really top-notch offensive line, you're not playing for championships. You're going to be 7-5, 8-4, that kind of thing. And so with that in mind, then we move on to the general consensus of opinion, I guess, that as far as college football in the SEC this fall, it's Alabama and Georgia, and then everybody else is a notch lower fighting for third place.
No, I would say that's not really the case. I think in most people's minds, it's going to be Georgia and then a notch back to LSU and Alabama and then a drop back to everybody else.
Well, I was just saying, who do you see worming their way up in there between Georgia and Alabama?
I think LSU is going to be the pick in the West next week by LSU? The SEC media. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, Daniels is one of the more proven quarterbacks coming back. Alabama's got a pretty significant question at quarterback, and LSU was the West champion last season. I agree. I think it could be close. You know, there could be people just saying it's still Alabama, it's still Nick Saban. But no, I think next week LSU will be the pick by most of the journalists to win the SEC West.
Where do they play Alabama and LSU?
That game in Tuscaloosa this year? Was it an overtime overtime win in Baton Rouge last year? I think that's right.
Okay, well, that could be a little bit of trouble for them.
Oh, it could. I mean, Alabama's just got – there are more questions on the Alabama offense right now, and it starts at quarterback. And do they have, game-breaking receivers? Their running game, their offensive line should be fine. Their running game should be outstanding. But who's going to be the quarterback, and can they have a quarterback that not only makes plays but doesn't turn the ball over? Their defense, I think most people feel Alabama's defense may be the best defense in the league, but Georgia just has so much talent on both sides of the line of scrimmage and talent everywhere. LSU has more right now proven game breakers offensively, and they've got plenty of talent back on defense as well.
Okay, well, it ought to be pretty darn interesting.
Oh, yeah. Then thanks. The thing is, appreciate the call, Yellowhammer. Then the question is the rest of the West. Not to say that no one else in the West could finish in the top two, but it really is, muddied as to, how the rest of the West is going to shape up.
And I think Auburn has enough questions that if they were picked to finish last by the media, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me too much.
State probably might be picked below Auburn.
They return Rodgers, which is the one reason I think but you're right, without Mike Leach.
Right.
So that's one thing to watch for. I would probably pick State to finish last in the West. I'm not sure I'm picking Ole Miss to finish ahead of Auburn. Well, that's an Ole Miss team that I think
a lot of people are really high on Ole Miss.
Bullish on this Ole Miss team this year. Arkansas is a team that brings back a lot. So yeah, we'll see how things shake out as far as the projected order of finish. A&M, a total wild card, right? I mean, could be
a lot of pressure on Jimbo. How's the Bobby Petrino hire going to work out? Who's going to be their quarterback? Is it going to be Connor Wegman? Is it going to be Max Johnson? I mean, there's quarterback battles around the SEC are just much, there are many more of them than we're used to. I know we had Scott hanging on, but I didn't want to get to him because I knew we were coming up on top of the hour break.
We got music about to play. Did you watch how much of the All Star game you watched?
I watched most of the All Star game.
How about that?
I thought it was a pretty entertaining game last night for a low scoring 3-2 game, but a lot of drama. Some near chances, some outstanding defensive plays.
It's not the event it used to be. I would point out no all-star game in sports is anymore.
No, you're right.
Compared to
it's not like
previously.
These guys never see any of the other guys.
And I think especially in baseball, some of the novelty went away when you introduced interleague play.
Right.
Free agency has made it to where you have less lifers and things like that.
There are hardly any. I mentioned that last night to somebody. I was like, used to
I mean, you would think, oh, you know who this player is with. Well, only in his first couple of years now do you know who a player is with.
There's also a lot more baseball on TV.
Oh, you're right about that.
I mean, back in the day, Bill, the All-Star Game was like your chance to see
it. Oh, it's a big deal. Yeah.
You finally get to see a guy who plays on the West Coast.
You might get to see a game when it wasn't a weekend. You know, that was a big deal. All right, we need to get to our top of the hour break. Scott, hold on. You're up when we come back for hour number two of the Wednesday Drive.
Hey, hunters, enter to win the Buck Fever giveaway. A drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover and 24/7, the 24/7 network, being with us in hour number one. I hope you got a chance to hear JC. If you missed any of it, check out the podcast, please.
Yes, you can catch podcasts of The Drive however you listen to your podcast. Go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center, or go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. That's all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Make sure you rate, review, subscribe if you use Google, Apple, Spotify, any of those platforms to check out the show.
Let's get right to the Kia of Auburn hotline, because Scott's been hanging on since the end of hour number one. Hey, Scott, how are you doing today?
Doing good. How about you guys?
Pretty good.
Yeah, I just kind of want to add my two cents about the last comment before I get to my main topic about the teams with some question marks going into the SEC season. I don't know about y'all, but I feel like Texas A&M offense, really Texas A&M as a team, that to me has the most question marks on that team. Like, okay, did Jimbo really give up control of the offense to Petrino? How much quote unquote better is the quarterback play going to be? All that stuff. But my main topic was coming off of the All-Star game last night. It was it was really nice. It's really cool to see what it was like. I think at one time Riley.
The whole infield was Braves.
Yeah. Whole infield was Braves. And so one topic I wanted to get y'all to ponder on. If you're Alex Anthopoulos and Brian Snicker, you have Orlando Arcia at shortstop, but also you have Vaughn Grissom in the minors. And I saw where I think the draft was like a couple nights ago, and they drafted a kid out of, I think it was a shortstop out of Oregon, I believe. And so if you're in those guys' shoes, what do you do at the shortstop position? Do you re-sign Arcia to a long-term deal, making him the kind of main shortstop, or do you try to work with Vaughn Grissom and try to get him better? Because I mean, let's just face it, from what we've seen so far of him fielding the ball, he's not a shortstop.
He's not a guy that looks like a major league shortstop, to be honest with you.
Yeah, so
I mean, I love his bat. I love some of the potential.
Absolutely.
But I feel like if the Braves, I mean, he is a prime chip, I think, for the Braves in a trade. Now, what do they need right now? I don't know that the Braves have a gaping hole. If they could trade him for someone that they could that they feel like they could control for a few years.
Who's starting for them in a playoff series right now? Who are the projections?
You mean starting pitchers?
Yeah, where you got?
Well, Matt, you're first of all, you're assuming that Freed's healthy, because it looks like he's about to be back.
Strider's probably at the top.
No question. Well, I don't know. I think Max may be at the top.
Maybe Max, but yeah, Strider and Max.
And then Strider.
Morton.
Bryce Elder is having an outstanding year. Charlie Morton is a really good number four or five guy. So you might be looking at a guy who might slot in at a three.
Yeah, I mean, if Elder keeps it up, especially. I think the fair thing to wonder about the second half of the season.
You still got Kyle Wright and Mike Soroka that you're watching them to see how they can do. Man, they've got some great chips for. What are they really? What are they looking for? I think Orlando Arcia. I don't think he's going to be a 300 hitter year in and year out. Man, I liked him when he came up with the Brewers. I thought that was a guy that had a chance to be a pretty good run producing, really good defensive shortstop. I don't know why the Brewers soured on him. Seemed like as soon as he came up, they started looking for somebody better. I think he's better than a lot of people have realized. Well, he's made the All-Star team now. But, I mean, the guy's only 27, 28. I guess he's 28 now. He's a guy. They've got Braden Shumake already that they know is major league quality defensive type shortstop. Yeah, they're okay in the minors. I think if they keep Vaughn Grissom, he's not going to be a shortstop. Where is he going to play, though?
If they
outfield
added,
has got to be where he plays.
If they added, like you said, if they added to the rotation, it would make some sense depending on what kind of production they get.
You'd want to get somebody though that is in his prime, somebody that's not a guy who's either, you think he's maybe got one last gasp, or somebody who's, you surely don't trade a Vaughn Grissom for a potential for a guy who's about to walk.
Oh, I'm not talking about what the Braves would pay for any of these guys. You know what I mean? I'm just talking about what the roster could maybe need, independent of Grissom or Arcia.
They could use somebody, as a future, as a replacement for Marcell Ozuna, who everybody wanted to run off after the month of April. He's really hit the ball well since then. I still think, and I love the bounce back of Eddie Rosario. But I think the Braves could use, if they could get, they hit the ball so well. But if you get a prime time,
corner outfielder
for the corner, oh yeah,
okay, yeah, big time corner outfielder would be amazing if they could pull that off. I guess it's fair to wonder how badly they need to make a deal like that and what kind of corner outfield.
Yeah, I don't think there's any Alex Anthopoulos has got to do something here. I think you make right now, you maybe look at tweaking if there's any opportunity to make a deal that, could make you even more imposing, then sure, you could do it. But he doesn't have to.
Closer, maybe, depending on, they've got Minter and Iglesias right now.
Minter and Iglesias would be great setup guys if you got just a lights-out closer.
If there was someone out there who's slamming doors shut that was made available from someone. I don't know how many lights out closers from teams that aren't projected as playoff teams are truly going to be available at the deadline this year.
Who? I mean, really?
Padres don't seem like they're going to sell, right?
Josh Hader is a lights out guy.
That would be the one where it's like if they're not. Do you consider any of the Rockies?
David Bednar.
Do you consider any of the guys in the Rockies?
I'm thinking Bednar is a guy that I've heard a couple of mentions with. And the Braves and Pirates have made some deals.
What about on the Royals? What's his name? Is Chapman still around?
He got dealt. He just got traded last week.
Okay, yeah, there you go. There's one right there. I'm not. I don't follow the AL. I don't know.
Yeah.
Where'd he go? The Rangers? Oh, okay. He stayed in the AL. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I didn't hear about it. So, the Braves don't – it's not a team that has
– They really don't have weaknesses defensively, offensively. Yeah. I mean, right now they're hoping to get some pitchers back.
As complete as any team in Major League Baseball.
Now, didn't Minter come up hurting it right just before the break.
Yeah, that would maybe add to their.
I think somebody in the bullpen.
Now they have some younger guys that if they wanted to give them a shot in
yeah,
in the
I don't
rotation,
know if you trust them as being set up.
I think
guys
they also
yet.
Think of them as starters down the line, so maybe they'd want to try to add to the bullpen.
But Strider started as a guy that would come in just firing gas from
Cardinals.
The bullpen.
Got anybody in the bullpen they could sell off as part of that?
Probably. Helsley's coming back from injury. Hicks, both those guys are 100-mile-an-hour guys that, they could come in and help, not necessarily come in and be the closer. Of course, the Cardinals are looking for pitching. Braves have some young pitchers.
Are the Cardinals looking
for pitching? Cardinals got way too many outfielders.
You think they're going to try to buy and, make a run?
I saw where John Mozeliak said that they're looking at 24.
Okay.
Is there – they're not giving up yet, but they're looking at –
That's what I suspect the Mets will do too in a teardown situation. Like it's not a teardown where they acknowledge, hey, this is going to take several years to replenish the roster. This would be a teardown with 24 men. That's why if the Mets decide to wave the white flag on this season, Pete Alonso, probably not part of the any sort of deal.
Yeah, I don't think so.
He's under team control for a year and a half. If the Mets were going to tear down for multiple years,
oh yeah, they were going to say we'll start over.
Alonso to a team that needs that bat and has minor
league
pieces to offer.
They've got older pieces they can move now. Canna.
I think they think they could win next year.
Yeah, they can move some of those guys that they don't look at as long term pieces.
The Nationals have anybody in the bullpen that would be enticing? I mean, that's another team that
Hunter Harvey's kind of been pretty good. Is that the guy's name?
I'm just thinking going nowhere.
Harvey. Yeah, I think that's it.
Sort of like teams that don't seem to have any real prognosis of making the playoffs this year would be places where maybe you could kick the tires on.
We're less than three weeks away from the trade deadline. Deadline's August 1st this year. Now let's see. And he started off talking. What did he first start talking about that he wanted us to address?
I don't know. I'm in baseball mode. It was A&M's quarterback situation.
Yeah.
And Petrino.
Talking about A&M. It's very interesting. They've got some talent.
He left a head coaching job to take this.
I just can't see him taking this unless he had been really assured by Jimbo that he had control. Now, the question is, if things don't go well immediately, can Jimbo keep his hands off?
I'd be more worried if it was someone who didn't have Bobby Petrino's track record as a play caller, right? If Jimbo Fisher had gone with someone inexperienced, then it's fair to wonder, does Jimbo trust that this guy knows what he's doing?
With the short fuses both those guys have.
Oh, for sure. I mean,
that could be really interesting to watch the sidelines
I wonder if Bobby's in the booth. I wonder if they decide let's create some.
Yeah, they may do that.
Let's create some
distance. That way, Jimbo could just take the headphones off.
Let's create some distance between these two rather than having them call it there on the booth. And maybe that's I don't know.
Bobby's used to being in the booth. I could see that.
Yeah, when he's the OC, he's been in the booth before. And it could work. I don't know if play calling was the only problem when you watched A&M last season. It felt like they were struggling to get
it. It had a good deal to do with it because it looked like they were playing. They were running,
03,
10 years ago's plays.
Oh yeah, no, it did feel
20 years ago.
It felt dated. You're right, but I also don't know if. It's fair to wonder if the skill position play. It's a little bit like.
God, it's hard to believe as well as they've recruited, but I mean, maybe they've just recruited too many guys at other positions. When you're on the outside, you see all the star ratings and everything that they got, but that doesn't necessarily translate into a team.
I guess the comparison for Auburn would be like 03, 04, right? Where it's like that 03 team had problems. Play calling was one of them.
No question.
There were some issues in the passing game, I think, independent of play calling, but the play calling was part of the problem. And if a new set of eyes comes in, refreshes the playbook, and a lot of those same pieces a year later are part of a really explosive offense. And Bobby Petrino was the offensive coordinator of the year before in 2002 for Auburn. Yeah, I think there's the hope that Petrino could show up and immediately unlock. What folks believe is, I mean, Wegman was a five-star, right, coming out of high school, if memory serves, the quarterback who finished the year last year. Max Johnson was a, Max Johnson was
I thought a, Max Johnson was the guy.
Yeah, I mean, we thought.
I thought he would be. I'm a little surprised that everybody's just assuming it's Connor Wegman right now.
Who was the guy that we kept? It was a Hudson something or the hand or so, he
started with an H.
Yeah, that guy. He was the starter for he played for a couple of years. The guy before Calzada went in with the injury the year before, and we thought Max Johnson would beat him out throughout most of the offseason. He ended up keeping his job. I think he was on the field for the App State loss in week two, and the A&M season never really bounced back from those early setbacks. So yeah, I think that's there's a lot of reason to believe you could get a different. You get a different looking A&M offense this year. There's also reason to believe they can continue to struggle.
Well, they've got isn't Anaya Smith back? Remember, he got hurt last year,
right? But they lost the other running back, or got.
Well, Smith was the receiver / kick returner that was so dang dangerous. A-Chain,
yeah, the running back. A-Chain's gone. Anaya Smith is back, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So I mean, there is some talent there. For Petrino to to tinker with. It's going to really, really be interesting. All right, we'll get to our first break here of hour number two. Love for you to join in anything on your mind sports-wise as we continue on the Wednesday Drive.
Kia of Auburn is
toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive, 19 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Wednesday afternoon with Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls, and we'd love for you to join in. Last night, as we mentioned a couple of times, the National League coming from behind, Elias Diaz, a lot of the Diaz clan involved in some interesting moments last night.
Are they related?
No,
I think they're just both Diaz's.
Well, yeah. there were like at least three in the game last night.
And the two
Yandy
that homered,
yeah. Yandy homered for the first run for the American League. Elias homered, hit the 2-run winning homer. Alexis Diaz came in and gave up the tying run that gave up what was the go ahead run to the American League before Elias Diaz. So you had a Diaz give the American League the lead, a Diaz give up the tie game for the National League, and then a Diaz hit the 2-run homer.
And Craig Kimbrell gets the save.
Yes, he did.
He's trimmed up a little bit.
He's got
a nice.
I like the unis last night.
Good. You did?
I did.
I would prefer the team specifics, I think.
They at least had their team's logo on the hat.
See, I think I like the team specifics with the ALNL hats rather than
When you do that, though, at times, sometimes it's a little confusing when you get similar uniform. So I don't know. I thought it was sort of cool. That was one of the things I liked.
I think part of that's so they can sell them, too. Like they can sell those ALNL replica jerseys to folks.
I thought the red carpet thing was just that's a waste.
See, that's such a cool ballpark, though, isn't it?
It's packed. It is.
I think Safeco's one of my favorites.
But I mean, the red carpet, I mean, I felt bad for when it was one representative of a team. He couldn't give fives to the girls on both sides.
Come to Seattle chant for Ohtani, I thought was awesome. That loud enough to hear it for the Seattle fans. Apparently, he spends quite a bit of his off seasons up there. He told the media. So I wouldn't rule them out of the sweepstakes entirely. That would be that's a city that's they've landed some big free agents before. They're in the Mariners organization.
There is some money up there,
and so I would I wouldn't count them out, especially if the player is already interested in attending. But yeah, Elias Diaz, the catcher for the Rockies, maybe going to be on the move. I mean,
he should be. I mean, man, if the Rockies can't cash in now, here's a guy who is hitting the ball very well, is just the all-star MVP. They could get something for him. The Rockies have always been just afraid.
The Marlins.
They're afraid if they trade somebody, he might be good, or we might get hot and get back in. No, they're not.
The Marlins need catching and would need
a
veteran
like
that.
There.
Be a great fit there. And the Marlins have a ton of young pitching, which is exactly what the Rockies need. So
it seems
easy enough. We'll see if the Rockies pull it off.
All right, let's get back to the Kia of Auburn hotline. 334-321-1390. And Sam is up next. Hey, Sam.
Hey, Sam.
Hey. Hey, do you mind if I talk a bit of NBA for a second?
Yeah, sure. What's on your mind?
Yeah, so what do you think the path would be to Dame being traded to the Heat? What would have to happen?
So it's such a bummer to me because I like Dame Lillard, but it's such a bummer to me that when you tell your team trade me to one place, not a list, not like a there's no competition, right? So the Heat. I wonder internally, if they're thinking, well, if this is the only place he'll accept a trade to,
why give up anything?
Why make the best offer possible? And so I could see where this could take a really long time. And I don't know if the Heat alone, I don't know, especially if they're reluctant to make the best deal, believing that they're going to get Lillard no matter what, because eventually Portland's going to cave. I wonder if they're prepared to make the strongest possible offer and give up, whether it's their all of their future picks or Hawkes or Caleb Martin, who was so good in the playoffs for them, like pieces like that I think Portland would understandably want in exchange for Lillard, or if Miami's going to have to spin off veterans to other contenders. You know, they're going to have to trade Hero somewhere and get some, you know, get some assets that they try to flip to Portland that way. But what would be great for Portland is if Dame Lillard was willing to accept a trade pretty much anywhere else, because that would put some pressure on Miami to make the strongest offer that they can and secure the deal. And, you know, I do wonder if a team like, I don't know, the Clippers or, you know, there's not a ton of teams that make a ton, you know, maybe the Knicks would love to be in this conversation, but there's not a ton of places where it makes, you know, it seems like they could also be seriously pursuing Lillard.
Okay. How do you see Golden State's year going?
Yeah, you know, so Ferguson's a big we're going to have Ferguson on tomorrow. He's a big Warriors fan. The Chris Paul thing is so weird to me. I guess he's going to be the backup, and they're going to try to preserve Curry in the regular season by maybe sitting him more and resting him more and using Chris Paul. You know, I wonder how often they'll be out there together. Steve Kerr's willing to go small. You know, as long as they've got that kind of star power, it's going to be tough to see them as anything but one of the top contenders. But it wasn't all that competitive against Denver. Or no, again they lost the Lakers. You're right. I mean, it seemed like there was some distance between Denver and everybody else. You know, I wonder if Golden State's done enough to try to close that gap, because the Nuggets were just they were head and shoulders above the rest of the Western Conference by the playoffs last year.
Yeah, I think they made a major error when they decided to trade Jordan Poole, because, like, I feel like he's kind of a young Steph, like not quite on that level, but he could have, like, they could have tried to mold him into a Steph.
See, it seemed like the choice they had to make, right, was either you keep Poole and maybe start looking past the Curry, Clay, Draymond Green era, or do you try to extend the window for Curry and Clay with you know, by trading Poole to pieces that end up becoming, among other things, yeah, becoming Chris Paul? So it's like I think it was a choice they had to make, and they decided that they're going to let Jordan Poole go be the front and center star for a different franchise. It's a little bit like when Oklahoma City decided they had to move on from Harden for the sake of the, you know, to get the best team possible around the other two guys. Now, that ended up being probably a mistake, considering what they got for James Harden. But we'll see if and there were also, you know, the behind the scenes stuff, the punch. There's things like that. Like it did seem like something needed to change for the Warriors. But I didn't have Chris Paul on my card as far as what was going to join the Golden State Warriors this offseason. And yeah, I'm really interested to see how they coexist together.
All right, guys, thanks. Thanks for taking my call. I always enjoy the show.
Appreciate the call, Sam.
Yeah, great stuff, Sam. Appreciate it.
Let's get, we've got time for another call, and Spectre is up next. Hey, Spectre.
Hey, guys. I was reading an article on Jason Campbell being our next color commentator.
Right.
And in the article, I don't know where it was coming from, but it was mentioned that he was the third analyst in the last 43 years, and I don't know if that's right or not.
All right, that would be since 1980. Well, obviously, you've had Stan for quite a while.
It was Charlie from 80 to 2000, I believe, is what the university claims. Is it was Charlie Trotman?
What happened to Pat Sullivan? He was.
Pat Sullivan was an analyst at some time in there. Yeah,
like 5 years before.
Yeah, I think they must have.
They
missed
must have
that.
Aired the Pat's. Yeah,
right.
Could Sullivan have been 80 to 85, and then Trotman shows up? Because when did Charlie play?
Charlie finished around 78, 79. I guess 79.
Yeah, because
it was probably Pat then Charlie.
Charlie ending in 2000 and Stan starting in 2001 sounds correct.
That does.
It's the question of when Charlie started and when Pat Sullivan went in there. But yeah, I mean, 15 or so years of Charlie and then 22 of Stan White does sound right. So probably Jason's probably the third. I would think Jason's probably the third in 37 or 38 years.
Yeah, it's still pretty impressive, but yeah.
Yeah, the reason I say that they list them as Charlie and Stan and then him, and I said no, that's not right. I mean, Sullivan was in there for I think at least 5 to 6 years.
Yeah, here as a matter of fact, in Auburn's release on the passing of Pat Sullivan, it says that Pat spent 5 seasons doing radio commentary for Auburn football before joining Coach Dye's staff in 1986 as quarterbacks coach.
So 80 to 85.
80 to 85 would have been Pat. Yeah. Or 81 to 85, I guess. Yeah, something like
now,
that.
Charlie was the commentator for Sanders, right?
Let's see. No. That was still Jim, yeah. Because it was Gusty Yearout with Gary Sanders.
Yeah, Gusty Yearout. Yeah, that's right, Gusty. You're right. All right, I was trying to read an article. It got me.
Oh yeah, yeah. They just yeah.
I'm excited about the Jason, and you know what, and maybe we'll get to talk to Andy Burcham sometime before the start of the season.
Yeah, hopefully.
We've had Andy on the show before. We love getting to talk to Andy, and we'll talk to him about Jason Campbell joining the booth, because that's going to be something else that's exciting. Jason's been part of the radio broadcasts these couple of years, but stepping into a new role with Stan White moving on.
Yeah, you're right. I'm anxious to see how it is too. I tell you what, those are big shoes to fill. I mean, it was like when Rob came in to fill Jim Fison's shoes. I mean, he basically did. But you know, I saw a listing the other day. They were listing the greatest football announcers in the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the guy, what's the announcer at Georgia that passed away?
Munson.
Oh, Larry Munson.
Yeah, he was number one, and Jim Fison was number three. I think it was.
Yeah, you talk about, that was the SEC Network had the special, what was it? I don't remember, but Voices of the SEC or whatever. I mean, it's great to watch that and brings back so many great memories.
It does. And then Rob ended up, not like, if I can remember, was number 8 on that list. And, but anyway, that got me to thinking. I couldn't remember, so I knew you would.
Yeah, I'm glad you called. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I was trying to remember the exact time when Pat was, but he was an outstanding color guy as well.
Oh yeah, exactly, absolutely.
Yep.
And I think that's what drew him down.
Keeping that string up of you know, it's since Gusty, it's been former Auburn quarterbacks.
Right. Exactly. All right, guys. I'll talk to you later.
Appreciate the call, Spector.
Well, and a couple of pretty famous SEC play-by-play guys stepping down in the last couple of years, right? Eli Gold was – how long was Eli there? 30, 34, 35 years, something like that, at Alabama before the 2022 season. And then the Florida, Mick Hubert. Mick Hubert was at Florida for 3-plus decades as well. Couple guys sort of, you know – iconic with the programs as far as the voices. Think about Eli Gold and all the Alabama plays. Think about with his voice, Mick Hubert like that with Florida. Mm-hmm. So a couple schools in the SEC have, you know, and Auburn's been blessed with a couple.
No question about it.
With voices like that.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Plenty of time for you to join in the final half hour here on the Wednesday Drive.
Part of the drive. Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final 20 minutes or so here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. Anything on your mind sports-wise? All right, we got into since it's still the All-Star break, We talked a little bit about the All-Star game. I was saying, yeah, I just noticed last night how odd it was that there were so many of the players with the name Diaz that were involved in key moments. But one of the things I wanted to get to something else. You were telling me that the viewership for the All-Star game last night was lower than the viewership for the Home Run Derby, that is among 18 to 49 year olds.
Yeah, I was looking at the some news about the ratings for the All-Star game, and it was a lot of events around sports will hit record lows compared to what they used to do, but it was the lowest audience for the Major League Baseball All-Star Game with a – let me see if I can get the –
Wow, and it seems like baseball has been I felt like interest was picking up in baseball.
Well, no, and it has. I mean, that doesn't necessarily translate to All-Star game viewership, but you're right. I mean, there have been
The All-Star Game's not, like you said a while ago, though, it's not the attraction that it used to be. It's not such an unusual thing to see guys from different teams and different leagues playing.
It was also the most, it was the most watched thing on television in about a month, too. So, I mean, The All-Star Game last night was the most.
I thought you said it had lower numbers than the Home Run Derby.
The 18 to 49 number was lower than the Home Run Derby the night before.
And that, I'm past 49, so I can't understand. The Home Run Derby to me is not nearly as interesting as it used to be. I think they've tried, in baseball's attempts to try to make the game more exciting, I think they've done a good job with the rule changes in baseball for this year, for the most part. I do like the fact that, did you see Rob Manfred said that there has been some talk about perhaps looking at adjusting some of the times a little bit? The Players Association would like a little more time for pitchers and hitters, but not giving them all the time they used to have. But anyway, I think some of the things that have been done to the Home Run Derby have made it less entertaining to me. I used to really like watching each home run and seeing how far it went, and you could ooh and ah more, and then watch the track, the yellow track or whatever, orange track or whatever of it, and see exactly where it went and tell you exactly how far it went. You can't do that anymore on TV because by the time that ball is landing, the next pitch is being swung at.
Yeah, I guess the decision to make it like very rigid and tournament-oriented.
Having brackets and times.
You know, and if that's your thing, like that's fine. To me, I would let all eight guys, you know, you get the 10 outs or whatever and the 15 outs, however you want to do it, and then you take the top two or three in the finals, and that's the Home Run Derby.
Hey, you know what?
Bit leisurely, I guess, but that's that I would, because I know, and I understand the thrill of, oh, he's got a minute to hit
12 home runs.
Yeah, I know, but I just, you know, I kind of like it the throwback rules.
All right, and explain this to me. Why does just about every, now maybe I didn't understand the 440 rules. If you hit one 440, you got 30 seconds. And if you hit two, you got two. I couldn't figure out. It seemed like everybody got 30 seconds.
I think if you hit it a certain, like,
Drew, turn your mic on. You're talking too much for this to be off.
I think you for like 4:30, you had to hit twice, and you got
4:40 is what they said.
Yeah, then I think you had to hit twice.
Didn't everybody get 30 seconds?
They might have.
If that's the case, then don't say they got 3 minutes. Say they got 3.5. Right.
Players who hit two or more home runs of 440 feet get an additional 60 seconds.
Yes, but who gets 30? It seemed like they were giving everybody 30. They were saying they'd say some players had 30 and others players had 60. I was not clear
Do you hit one of your? Hold on, there are rules here that I can.
You don't
can
have the golden ball or whatever anymore.
At the end of the regulation round, players will be granted 30 seconds of bonus time. So everybody gets 30 seconds of bonus
time.
So
why don't they just say everybody has 3.5 minutes?
Because
you get a break at the end of 3 minutes.
Because you can add to your bonus time, I guess, is why they want to call it that. So you can
don't say it's 3 minutes.
You can earn an additional 30 seconds of bonus time with the two home runs.
Yeah.
So that's the there's the confusion there. Everybody gets the 30-second bonus.
So everybody gets 3.5 minutes.
But it's still a bonus.
No, it's not. If everybody gets it, it's not a. It's like it's a standard thing for everybody.
Right, but it's a bonus.
No, you only get the really the extra 30 seconds if you hit
I've
two.
Never
and why two 440-foot homers?
I don't know. I've never considered in my life, Bill, whether or not it's still a bonus if everybody gets it, or if it's just part of the salary. Right? Like that's like, well, wait a minute.
It's just part of the salary if everybody always gets it.
Well, I don't know. You know what? I suppose so. But I, you know, I'm not sure. But anyways, no, the rules, and I get that the you know,
hey, look, a lot we're of gonna be on, we're gonna be on until 5:59 and a half, but we'll bonus that extra 30 seconds for you.
A lot of the, I understand a lot of it's to make it a more exciting television event and to add tension.
I don't
and
think
drama
it has though,
every,
really.
Yeah, I mean it hasn't for me either. I mean to me, the I liked when it was 8 All Stars and it wasn't as
You liked it when it was only the players who made the All Star team
yeah,
too.
I liked that
sort of caught me a little by surprise when they started bringing in guys that didn't make the All-Star team to participate in the Home Run Derby.
Personally, I'd be okay, you know, if you had to be on the All-Star team to participate in the Home Run Derby, and then it was sort of, you know, you give everyone a set number of outs, and then you,
like
you advance.
I like that. That way you're not just swinging at everything, and that way if you're getting pitches like
and it'll give them time to interview all the guys there on the sideline, and you know, there's you can create you can have conversations happening while that's going on. And you know, while still stopping to admire moonshots and things.
I think it's good for players to be able to admire those shots too.
I think it's taken some of the fun that the announcers were having.
Oh yeah,
some of the fun that the players.
Oh, you can't have a back. You know, it's like that one's gone, and here's the next one.
Yeah, and I'm not calling for Berman to return necessarily.
No, I don't need him because he never could tell if it was a pop fly or a 400 footer.
but I could. I do sort of. Yeah, I think making the I know why
Eddie struggled the other night a little bit.
I know
there were so many going so fast. He was trying to say, "There's the next 440."
Baseball, like I get speeding up the regular season game.
I think it's great. I love it. Baseball is much more fast paced.
I think the Home Run Derby is something that doesn't need the pace ratcheted up of it. I think that's one thing.
That's
where
one
it's
where
like,
the fans need to enjoy.
Yeah, let them breathe.
Look at that one.
Let them.
And then have the PA announcer be able to go, "Yeah, that one went however many feet, 448 feet, or something like that."
And they're a cut look. Maybe it's partially because I was a kid. But it's like there are reasons.
We all were, Dan.
No. Hold on. At this specific moment, when I think about like the '90s home run derby specifically.
Oh yeah.
Being these things where you'd see majestic home runs and these unbelievable displays of, not that you're not getting that now. I mean, you're getting displays, but I think it's
you can't really tell it as much.
Yes, because they've sped it up and they've made it more of about the number of home runs in a certain time period.
Now you're thinking, did 5 homers ago, was that one of those blasts?
Yeah.
But you really had a chance for it to soak in back in the day.
And also, you know what? When the balls are flying that fast and furious, you also get kids.
You have chances. I don't know if we'll ever see kids back on the field fielding. I think
that might be it.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's got to be.
Well,
especially when they're going that fast. If they're not doing it as fast as they can swing, then they have a chance. Maybe, of course, that kid thought he was going to catch it.
It's like,
the ball just was tailing. And
it's
it was,
like it's like
it
the old it's like the old dodgeball trick, right? Where you throw one of them up in the air, and then while everybody's looking
right,
at that
bam,
you smash it with the other one. It's like you don't have that happening on the field.
No, you don't. You don't need with balls coming 100 and something miles an hour.
Yeah, with Juan Soto smashing.
That was Vlad.
Yeah.
Oh
Vlad
man,
Vlad Guerrero. Oh my.
Yeah, no yeah, kidding. No, you're home run champ.
I'd rather play dodgeball with Randy Johnson throwing actual baseballs, right? Like not even. You're better off with that than Vlad Guerrero smash.
I don't know about that either. I think Randy could still probably bring it pretty good. All right, we'll get to our final break.
I just used Randy in the grid today. That's why he was on the mic.
Yeah, that is a very interesting thing. I appreciate Jeremy mentioning that yesterday. I got in there and it's like, oh yeah, this is not child's play. We'll get to our final break here on the Wednesday Drive. Still time for you to join in, 334-321-1390. Stick with us.
Hey, sports fans, Jeff Myers.
ESPN 1067 online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive, final segment here on this Wednesday afternoon. And now Spector's calls got me questioning some of the things. I'm trying to remember because, in between Gary Sanders and Jim Fife was Paul Ellen. Paul was the play-by-play. And I'm thinking, was Mike Colon the color analyst for Paul? I'm thinking that was the case, and that would have ended in 80. And then I think Pat Sullivan would have started in 81. 81 to 85 would have gotten those 5 years that we were looking at on the story about Pat Sullivan's passing. So, yeah. And yes, Captain Crunch, Mike Colon, great linebacker at Auburn and with the Dolphins.
Yeah, in a season where a lot has changed for Auburn, the Jason Campbell thing, another aspect of that change is Jason will be in the analyst seat for radio broadcast next to Andy Burcham this fall. Really looking forward to hearing those two on the call this season.
And Spector is back.
Hey, Spector,
you remember that? I think we sort of left out the Doug Barfield years.
Yes, I was just thinking about that when you brought it up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I remember Colon. What was the other guy's name?
Well, it was Paul. It's Paul Ellen, who is still with the network. Yeah.
I keep thinking Tim, but that's his brother.
Yeah,
right?
Tim's his younger brother.
Yeah. Paul, I tell you what, I listened to a lot of Auburn radio back in those days, and that was one of the reasons why when the time had came for them to replace Rob, Paul was my first choice.
Paul's got a lot of irons in the fire. He's had an ad agency,
yeah.
He's had some health problems, but it was great to hear him back on baseball, see him back this year.
Yeah, I agree.
Paul and I worked together. I'll sort of date myself a little bit. I mean, we were in school together and worked together at a couple of places back in the day.
Right. Yeah, I was thinking about it. There's got to be somebody else I'm thinking
of. Oh, yeah.
And then when you brought it up, it's like our minds clicked together.
Well, yeah, I was thinking about the numbers. It's like, wait, that didn't add up. I said, no, there's somebody else in between. And it's like, oh, yeah, it's the end of the Barfield era after Charlie. Because Charlie was just finishing up school, there in 1980.
Right, that's right. Okay. Time to go, guys.
Appreciate it, Spector.
Okay.
334-321-1390. Yeah, fun to reminisce about some of those things and look forward. Yep, with Jason getting the opportunity there as we get closer to the SEC Media Days, which gets started on Monday. Dan going to be up there.
Yeah, we're headed
representing
up,
for the drive.
We're headed up Sunday. You'll be able to hear 7 hours of Media Days coverage all week long. On ESPN 106.7, 11 to 2. You got the Max Roundtable with Doug. Never know who's going to pop in with Doug.
No, you're right about that.
On SEC Media Day. I might be expected to if I can wake up on time. You've got the
That's going
to
be tough, man. That's an 11 o'clock start.
That's an 11 a.m. show.
Doug will be unbelievably bouncy and ready and
midway
everything.
Through his
because,
day, yeah.
Because, no, I mean, this week – wraps things up for Doug's early mornings. He is no longer, he is hanging it up with the early morning TV, and he will actually be able to, sleep past 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning the way he's been.
Love that show, though. It's too bad that...
I was on there a couple of times, and let me tell you, I am up usually, but it's just I'm up and getting, in the shower. I'm not usually up and ready to be on... Especially at the times he wanted me on.
I think before. I was on that show once, but how would I? How would I? Might have been a dream.
It may have been a dream, or it was an all-nighter, so it just hopefully
felt
like a dream.
Might have rolled in last year at Media Days.
So Doug will be.
Rolled in right when he was starting.
Doug should be pretty lively. I mean, it'll be like, man, he's been sleeping. Sleeping his life away when he gets on the air.
There's going to be great stuff, though, next week. You're not going to want to miss it right here on ESPN 106.7.
Yeah, no kidding. So looking forward to that. I mean, Monday, let's see. Do you have the – I don't have the roster here in front of me.
I think the three going on Monday are LSU, A&M, and South Carolina. I've got the schedule. Let me pull it up.
That's three pretty energetic coaches.
Let me see if I can get a schedule.
I mean, with Brian Kelly, Jimbo Fisher – and Shane Beamer, to go along with the commissioner, that's a pretty good first day. That's a pretty good way to get things started.
Got that one wrong. Okay, uh-oh. So it's going to be Monday. You got the SEC commissioner and LSU going from 11:30 to 1:45,
mm-hmm.
and then A&M and Missouri going from.
Okay, 1:45. Well, you still Eli's. Pretty entertaining
through,
as well.
Through that, and that's going all the way through the first hour of our show. So I may cut in and out. Brian's going to be here on Monday, so I'll do what I can. But we'll also try to get Jimbo.
I'll see
and,
if Brian has grown the hair out of any by then.
Yeah, really excited for you to be able to.
I heard the rundown today. They were talking about it on that.
Okay, so I didn't pull the curtain back too much.
Oh no, Brian's. No. They were talking about it. And Brian, very proud of it.
Tuesday, you got John McDade, the coordinator of football officials, going in the morning to start things off. Then Vanderbilt and Georgia, part of the early shift. Auburn and Mississippi State, part of the late shift, 1 to 4:10 tomorrow. And then Wednesday, Bama and Arkansas in the morning. Florida and Kentucky.
How many new coaches are there in the
afternoon,
SEC?
I believe just two.
Both of them are going Tuesday afternoon?
That's right. Both are going Tuesday afternoon, the two first-year coaches in the conference. Florida and Kentucky in the afternoon on Wednesday, and then we close out on Thursday with Ole Miss, South Carolina, and Tennessee all going together from 9 a.m. to 2:15 before the ceremonies close. Tennessee closing things out in Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's
first,
appropriate.
First time the state has hosted SEC Media Days.
Yeah. Well, Nashville, not a bad place to be at all. So I'm sure a good time will be had by many. And we had a good time here this afternoon. Appreciate the calls. Thanks to Jason Caldwell for being with us for most of hour number one. We're out of time, though, here on the Wednesday Drive. Ferg back?
Ferg will be in the house tomorrow.
Good deal. Looking forward to that. Justin Ferguson joins us tomorrow. Hope you will as well. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.